B-Pod Studios.
97.5 The Fanatic.
It's 1 o'clock and you're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPEN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studios, only from Comcast. We're a Beasley Media Group station, and joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast, the great Jimmy Lynam, talking about that era. So, Jim, what surprised you the most of the the first two episodes? And I got to point to, how about Phil Jackson saying, Krause telling Phil Jackson he's got one more year left after winning all those titles?
Yeah, as sometimes is the case, what really, I think, grabbed me at the beginning, how unique is this? I knew Krause. When I spent 2 years as the GM, I had dealings with Krause. And Krause was a different kind of guy, plain and simple. Like, you saw the disdain with which both Jordan and Pippen treated Krause. You ready? That was universal.
Yeah,
that's just fact.
Yeah,
the whole league treated him that way. It's the way he deserved to be treated. It's the way the corner grocer would treat him. This guy was like in a world of his own, plain and simple. And actually, I tried on occasion. I mean, literally, sometimes we'd be at league meetings, you know, in a situation where they would be beating on him so much that empathy took over, and I would try to actually defend the guy or befriend the guy or both on occasion. Hopeless. I mean it literally. He was one of I've never been around another person like him, I can tell you quite honestly. But at doing his job, you have to say, he didn't draft Michael, but in surrounding him, what was it, the sixth year until they won it, and it wasn't a coincidence that Scottie Pippen, you know, entered the picture. But Krause, really, he was the architect of that situation. And I think that you're asking me what grabbed me about last night.
Yeah.
It was like, can you believe, what a storyline. You can't live. I have a phrase from way, way back. You can't make this stuff up. Like, you write it and put it in a book and you lay it on the publisher's thing. He comes back the next day and goes, dude, would you please? There has to be something believable in this unless you're writing fantasy. This is fantasy. This guy, Jerry Krause, he was a baseball scout. Typical of him. I could picture this call. I don't know that this took place. I'll bet it took place. Jerry Reinsdorf is a hands-on owner.
Right.
He gets a call from one of his top baseball scouts. Mr. Reinsdorf, I really think we need to meet tomorrow. And Reinsdorf going, you know, all right, yeah, Jerry, good. What's 2 o'clock? Sure. Hangs the phone up. And Reinsdorf saying, yeah, I'm meeting with the guy. The guy's a bit of a character, but he's a hard worker and a good scout. Reinsdorf thinks he's coming in to talk about a young pitcher from South Carolina. Krause is coming in to tell Reinsdorf, I think the answer to your basketball Bulls problem is me. You need to hire me as the GM. I guarantee you that's how that went down. So the storyline here is we're watching this like most improbable of guys create one of the legendary franchises in the history of sports. And then decide to dissemble it years later. I mean, come on, can't make that up.
Talk from a coach's standpoint about you got Phil Jackson, and the two won't even speak. Before the season, Krause tells Phil, you can go 82-0, this is still your last year.
Yep.
He invites Tim Floyd to the wedding, but he doesn't invite Phil Jackson. That's outrageous. That's making up, publisher.
Yep. I'll tell you a story, Anthony. Here you go. I think I'm in the front. I'm the general manager. I think that's what it is. We're in the old spectrum. Play the Bulls. Game over. And word comes. Somebody comes rushing into the locker room and say to me, Coach, Jerry Krause just collapsed in the Bulls locker room. So I rush down the corridor and I talk to him before the game.
Yeah.
So I rush down He's laying on the floor, kind of propped up against the wall. And I look at him. He's white as a ghost and foaming at the mouth a bit. And his breathing is very erratic. So I turned to the two security guys. I said, did they get an ambulance?
Yeah.
So they look at each other. I said, God, dude. I said, get him an ambulance. Yeah. All right. From the floor, cross. Now he's kind of a little I don't know what the right word medically would be. He was like, he was conscious, but he wasn't quite fully coherent.
Right.
So he goes, I don't need it. I'm not no ambulance. Jerry's cross doesn't like that. So I put my finger in his face. I said, Jerry, you collapsed on the floor. You're white as a ghost. You're foaming at the mouth and barely breathing. I said, you're getting an ambulance if we have to put you in a straitjacket, okay? So you're at the hospital. I'm in charge. True story.
What was wrong with him?
He had a mild heart attack.
Wow.
Yes. He wrote me a thank you note about, I'd say, a week. He's in the hospital here for like 3 or 4 days. Wrote me a thank you note 3 or 4 days later. No.
Wow.
More than that. Into the next week.
That's wild. Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Yeah, he was a very cantankerous guy. He was, when you say, you know, he didn't really, it didn't matter. Like, he almost thrived on, you know, enjoying that kind of an environment, you know, that most of us would, you know, prefer to avoid at all
right.
costs.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. You know, like his team, it didn't bother him that there was that kind of chaos. He actually felt that would bring the best out of him.
And they mocked him. Like, they talked about openly mocking him.
Now, in fairness, you ready? This is just me objectively saying. Yeah. You're removing all emotion from the situation. He deserved to be mocked. Yes. Deservedly so. That's an honest statement. And I tried to defend him on occasion because it got so, I mean, it was almost embarrassing how they would ridicule this guy.
Oh, my God.
But give him his due. When right. it came to putting the team together, he knew what he was doing.
Now was Phil, how great of a coach? Like, looking at this whole thing from your standpoint, How good was Phil Jackson as a coach?
I was a little slow to the party, Anthony, to be honest.
Yeah.
The answer to your question, one of the best ever, and the real testimony to me is the fact that a lot of the things that Jackson saw, you know, in it, the way he saw, and I think that triangle offense was a little too much organization for me, not quite enough expression of freedom for great ones to do their thing. Like every once in a while, give Barkley a ball and get out of his road and he'll take care of it. We don't right. need, you know, any tricks, Phil. You know, like when you move here, you just get out of his road. You move anywhere you want and Childs will take care of things. Well, Jackson's concept of basketball in a big picture, simplistic way was five people moving around. You don't stand still.
Right.
You kind of move around. You all handle the ball. It doesn't matter what spot you're on the court. You're equally comfortable, like kind of synchronized with the next guy and knowing how to help the next guy.
Right.
And it's a nice flow to it. A little too choreographed for me, but today's play, there was a lot of elements of Phil Jackson in today's play. Spacing was this yeah. huge thing. Nobody yeah. ever heard of the word spacing before Phil Jackson. We knew to give a guy floor space to get out of his road.
Right.
But five-man spacing, Phil Jackson, and his architect, Tex Winter, yeah. really was, he was the godfather of the triangle offense. He used it when he was a college coach at Kansas State. In fact, as a young kid, I come in to see them play against the University of Pennsylvania here. And I remember, I said, boy, I had no idea what they were doing. But I said, boy, that team, like, something about the way they play.
Yeah.
And it was like just almost a ballet kind of thing, flow to the play of their game. So Phil Jackson, and he did it with a lot of different kind of players, Pippen and Michael. Then he goes to the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq.
Yeah, I remember being at practice with Kobe the first year. He was hurt when Phil took over. And so he was watching. I was doing a story for the Inquirer on Kobe, and he was watching practice. And after practice, we were talking about the triangle, and we were wondering, I was like how's he going to fit in a triangle, right? Because he didn't have, there's still a subtle difference between him and Jordan. And, you know, he was way more volume than even Mike was in that early Kobe. And it somehow it worked perfectly with him.
Yeah, that was kind of part of the magic of Phil Jackson. And now substitute Shaq, I would agree. Obviously, Kobe and Michael, very similar, you know, in their styles of play. But now you got to also take Shaq instead of Pippen.
Yeah.
But the way they played, that flow to it, with given your superstar the opportunity anytime you want it to do his thing within the confines of the offense, which the Stars had. So it did not only did it not hamper Kobe, Shaq, Michael, Pippen, it helped all of them.
Wow, that's awesome.
Because of this freedom of motion and spacing that it gave the star players.
All right, real quick, because I thank you, Jim. We always appreciate your time. We almost forget how great Charles was. He, in that game, he has 34, 20, 8 assists. And I was making a point to Andrew just a little while ago saying, you know, because he's such a character, we underrate how great he was.
Yeah, no, Charles and I have talked about this over the years. Charles was one of the best basketball players ever. In fairness, he was not a great shooter. He wasn't a bad shooter. I'd call him a decent shooter.
Did he become a sneaky good three-point shooter at the end better?
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't. Okay. He could make what he would make. He was always up to the challenge of taking any shot.
All right.
He actually enlightened me in my early coaching with him to the fact that not everybody wants to take the last shot, literally. You know, I would draw the last shot for, you know, who I thought could make it number one, and then I would check who I thought was going to defend him number two. And Charles one time said to me, he says, you know, you're discounting one thing. I said, what's that? He said, you said number one, number two. He said, you should change. They should be number two, number three. Number one should be, does he want to take it? And that never entered my mind. Of course, you're an NBA player and you don't want to take the shot that's cooked. Well, guess what? Charles is right on target.
Wow.
So there was never a shot at crunch time in the game that Charles Barkley didn't take or didn't want to take. I drew a play one time in the Boston Garden for Ron Anderson. And the nature of the play was Larry Bird's going to guard Anderson. Larry Bird can't guard you. He can't guard me. I love Larry Bird at the other end of the court.
Right.
So either Bird's going to try to run out and guard Anderson off the five-man set in the screen, which means Robert Parrish is guarding the five-man. So if Bird wants to switch, Parrish has to try to switch out and get Anderson. Neither one of them can get out to guard Ron Anderson. It's that simple. So we run the play. Ron Anderson comes off the screen. Bird, of course, gets a little hung up. He's late. Basket at like 2 seconds. Bird misses a runner after a timeout at the other end. Puts it on the back rim, by the way.
Oh.
And we win one.
Wow.
Celebrating in the locker room for some. It may have been my first win in the Boston Garden. So after, this is like 10 minutes in the locker room afterwards. Beers, you know, guys are throwing stuff, screaming and yelling like college guys. Charles comes over to me and taps me on the shoulder. He says, great call. Look at me right in the eye. Taps my beer like this and went, don't ever do it again. True story. True story. And I knew exactly what he meant.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
True story. What he was doing was he was defending his turf.
Yeah.
He wasn't saying, if I did that, a win the game or lose the game shot had to be taken at the buzzer. Charles Barkley deserved to take the shot. We had a conversation about it the next day. I said, sorry, Charlie, yesterday. I got caught up with trying to win the game. I apologize.
What a story. That's a great story.
Charles Barkley is one of the best players of all time. And if he were sitting right here and joining us with this conversation, here's the one difference between Michael Jordan. The difference in talent, I mean, Barkley's talent was so immense that you can't even, I've been around a lot of these guys. You can't even dream it. I mean, this is back in the 90s we're talking. He was a tremendous passer. I remember him one night, he pinned the ball at the Spectrum. He pinned the drive on the glass, pinned it up on the glass, which wasn't goaltending. I'm surprised they didn't because he pinned it. Two-hand pin on the glass.
Damn.
Takes the ball on the drive, full court, off the pin of a shot. He's dribbling the ball. He dribbles behind his back, right hand to left hand, somewhere in the midcourt area, and, like, tears the basket down at the other end of the court.
Oh.
I mean, I have flashes of him that just absolutely astound. What he didn't do, Anthony, like to be like put where he belongs in terms of his talent. He needed to be motivated. He needed to challenge. You know, there were nights if he was playing against a team that he knew, you know, you were going to win the game, or, you know, they couldn't guard him. You know, it wasn't important to him to go out and try to accumulate stats.
Wow, it's like kind of Embiid. That's interesting.
Maybe to a point, yes. Yeah, it's an interesting, I never thought about that. Bobby Knight said it last night in that documentary, that what separated Jordan, Bobby Knight said, which made him the best player I've ever seen. You know, the desire to dominate every time out.
Wow.
It's almost impossible.
Yeah.
To the degree that the Michael Jordans of the world, there aren't many of them, believe me.
But that's why you got to go MJ over LeBron. I love LeBron, and as great as he is, I mean, that's why, to me, Jordan's still number one.
Yeah, it's a fine line. For me, somebody could say you're putting too much emphasis. Michael was such a great mid-range shooter. LeBron is not. LeBron is more physical without question. But here's where Michael, I think, has the edge. In winning close games and making the plays that win games, Michael Jordan is an 84% career foul shooter. LeBron is 73. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
So when there's 6 seconds left in a game, Michael is dying to get fouled, because if he gets fouled, bang, bang. He never missed the clutch foul shot, ever. You see? I watched ever. He's 84%. So he's got that weapon at the end of a game. When he drops his head, he can go by anybody he wants. So can LeBron. But LeBron's not dying to get fouled. Why would he?
He only makes
73%. He misses one out of four. Michael makes them all. All. If he's 84 career, he's 99 inside a minute.
That's awesome.
His thirst to win, like, just drives that up at the end of the game.
Man, I tell you, I could do this all day. You're the greatest. Jimmy, you're the best, man.
I just feel so fortunate, privileged. I enjoyed so much watching the special guys go about their business and just to have been a part of it, you know, was such a, you know, it was a challenge in one sense. But a thrill. There was a lot of fan in me every time I went to the building, and I mean that.
That's cool. That's beautiful, man. That's well said. It's poignant, too. That's great. Brother, thank you. Please be safe, and I can't wait to talk to you again.
Likewise, buddy, and everybody listening, the same thing. Safety, number one. This, as difficult as this whole thing is, it's put a lot of things in perspective. And obviously, there's nothing more important than our health, the health of our loved ones, and the health of the guy next door.
Amen, brother. Amen. I love you, buddy. Thank you.
How are you? Good talking, pal.
There he is, the great Jimmy Lynam on the Comcast Business Highline. Tunis, I mean, are you kidding me with those stories?
No, they were awesome. The Barkley stories.
Oh, my God. Like, I mean, that's outrageous. The Krause, See, this is what, like, the insight. I love the insight. Like, I'd want, see, I always, see, I like the stories, right, the anecdotes, where you're taking me in a place and I'm a fly on the wall. The beauty of guys like Jimmy Lynam is that, you know, they're there, right? Like, they lived through it. They coached against Jordan. They coached the Barclays. They lived it. The Krauses of the world. Like, I mean, you know, that's why the fly on the wall story is always my favorite. Always my favorite. Let's go to Glenn in Wallingford. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. G!
Yo, what's happening?
What's up, my brother?
Yo. Oh, dude, I just listen. Have me, you, and Jimmy Lynam at the bar just talking for a couple hours over this stuff? Are you kidding me? That was fantastic. Fantastic stuff. Best. Hey, but before I get to my Jordan stuff, real quick, I know you were talking about the Eagles draft. If they do a 1 and a 2, I'm okay moving up. But any more than that, I don't want to give everything because there are a lot of wide receivers, and so you know I don't want to sell the house.
Not a lot of special wide receivers.
There's not a lot of wide receivers.
Gee,
I hear you.
I don't want to screw around.
Well, I know, but, you know, hey, listen, the Eagles' history with wide receivers isn't exactly, great. I mean, how we pick
exactly.
Wide receivers.
All the more reason to trade up.
You might be right about that, but giving up that all of that stuff, like I've heard, like 1, 2, 3, 4, and next year 2 or something, that's a lot. But to get back to the Jordan stuff, that stuff was phenomenal last night. And. Yeah. You know, and being a Sixer fan, I hated the Bulls. I liked watching Jordan, but I hated the Bulls. And you know, me and my buddy were talking last night. I was texting him. I said, you have, because, you know, people, I think a lot of this, you know, it's revisionist history, right? People are like, oh, Jordan, blah, blah, blah. You know, I appreciated Jordan while we were in the moment, and I think I appreciate him more now. But I hated the Bulls. I mean, and I think most people like you and me, and even my buddy, we're saying, you know, no one liked the Bulls. I mean, people kind of liked Jordan, but, I mean, we respected Jordan. We liked watching Jordan. But, I mean, as far as, like, being fanboys and stuff like that for the Bulls, like, now, you know, you have everyone kind of roots for a player and then roots for that team. I think that's, like, a different. I mean, do you kind of get that same feeling? I know Tunis was even saying that in those highlights.
Yes.
That people were rooting for the Bulls. And that definitely wasn't a 60-40 split at watching those games from what I remember. But as the game was getting closer, people were kind of like, uh-oh, here comes Jordan. He's putting the team on his back. I think it was more of that than anything else, right? I mean, yeah, Tunis is young, so.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. I think that's more thing. I mean, we remember the admiration. He was different because it was like watching what Babe Ruth was perceived to be, right? And we all recognized it. Like at the time, you recognized the greatness of Jordan.
Absolutely, but we hated losing to him. I mean,
without a doubt. We were fans first, right?
Right, and it wasn't like, we lost, oh, well, oh, that's okay, but it was Jordan, you know, and it wasn't like you accepted it like that either.
I just
remember, you know, you're during the playback, I could just kind of, think back in my head, you know, watching the Sixers, and, you know, you got Johnny Dawkins and the G-Man, and they're out there in their red unis or the white unis, depending whether they're on the home or on the road, and they all wore the black sneakers. For that time, for those playoff runs, and you see like G-Man and those black sneakers, and you're like, man, that just doesn't go together, you know.
That's right.
But it's funny. You know what? I tell you, you had a couple guys. I mean, Johnny Dawkins. If he just never hurt his knee, I mean, how good would the Sixers be with Johnny Dawkins?
They were sneaky good, man, right? I mean, I thought they were sneaky good. You're right about Dawkins. Dawkins is a hell of a point guard, man. And Hersey could shoot it. He really could. Gee, great stuff, man. I love it. Thank you. We appreciate this. We're a lot of fun, man. We still got about half hour and change left. So let's keep it going. Got a couple open lines, 610-632-0975. It's Cuz Radio with Shunis right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
.com.
All right, welcome back. Cuz Radio with Shunis hanging out. Always fun hanging out with you guys. This is always good times. Even during these trying times, it's good to be together. A couple things. Don't forget. Because of the draft, we're going to have some fun with a Zoom draft. That's right. The Zoom draft. It's a virtual roundtable that's happening Wednesday night. Sal, Pal, and myself, we're having a virtual meeting you're not going to want to miss. How'd you like to be one of 30 spots in the 2020 draft virtual roundtable with me and Sal, Pal? It's being presented by our great friends at 19 Crimes Wine. Go to 975thefanatic.com right now. Register for a chance to be part of our exclusive virtual draft roundtable to be held Wednesday night from 6 to 7. Everyone that registers will have a chance to win an away game trip for two to see the Birds play at the Meadowlands or in Washington this season, courtesy of our good friends at phillysportstrips.com, the absolute best way to travel with the best fans to see the Birds play away. Ask questions, listen to our experts, get yourself ready for the draft with our exclusive Fanatic 2020 Draft Virtual Roundtable. It's all presented by 19 Crimes Wine and 97.5 The Fanatic. Shunis, interestingly, you know, we were talking about people betting on the draft. In PA, they don't allow it.
Yeah, I saw that, I think, yesterday. And I was like, huh? And so I read a couple things. I know. I think you confirmed it. It's just like, why?
Yeah, and our good friends at Parks Casino, Matt Cullen, who's the senior vice president of interactive gaming, said that PA does not allow the regulations to bet on these kinds of event. But I guess New Jersey's one of them.
Yeah, Jersey does. There was New Hampshire does. I think Delaware was one of them that does. There was four. And I think Indiana maybe, but PA does not allow it, which is weird. And the rule is because it's not a live sport. It has to be game action or prop bets like who do you think is going to win the championship, that kind of stuff.
Wow. And real quick, breaking news, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf extended PA stay-at-home order through May 8th. That's the date he said the state will begin to take small measured steps toward reopening on that date, including what he called limited construction operations and online automobile sales. So just FYI, that's what Governor Wolf just said.
Good. Nice response to those nitwits that are protesting.
I know. I know. I mean, come on. This is for, you know, again, this isn't, they aren't taking liberties away from you. They're trying to protect everyone. That's all.
And I totally understand that, you know, people have lost jobs because of it. And I feel for them. But they're not doing it to be like, oh, we're trying something new here. Like, no, it's like, dude, there's a pandemic out there. We're trying to stop it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't fight a pandemic. Right? Like, you can't personally, like, until you have a vaccine, you can't find a way to personally fight it. Like, I remember the Philadelphia, like, health authority guy was like, oh, we're Philly, we're tough. It's like, I don't care how tough we are. I don't care if you can go, you know, throw a right hook at a Cowboys fan and knock him out. You can't throw a right hook at a pandemic.
And a virus.
You know, don't give me we're tough. Like, come on, man.
Stupid. I know. It's ridiculous.
But it's leading to some crazy stuff, Anthony. And we have a interesting tweet from Adam Schefter.
Yeah, tell us about the practice draft, because I'm worried about Thursday night.
Yeah, so they decided to wait till the week of. So here's the tweet from Adam Schefter. Text from a participant on the NFL's mock draft that started at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Quote, mock draft today, already technical glitch with Cincinnati's first overall pick. Brutal. The first pick had issues. It didn't even get the pick 10.
Could this thing just be a disaster?
It really could be. It could be. I mean, if there's glitches and all that kind of stuff, I don't know. It's like you almost need to put a landline in everyone's house.
I would think so. I mean, I think at the very least, they'll be texting the pick.
Exactly. Yeah, you get the ding. Commissioner Goodell's got the iPhone.
Come on, Howie. Let's go, brother. Let's go. Let's make that. As long as Howie can make the trade, that's all that matters. As long as he could text the Niners and call the Niners and make the trade. Let's go to Doug in Williamstown. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Doug!
Hey, guys. How you doing? I want to thank you guys for showing up every day and being there. Give us some kind of normalcy in our lives to hear you every day, cuz, and Andrew. So thanks.
Thank you, bro. Well, how you been, man? I miss you.
I've been working down in Harris, as you were talking about the construction, where about people talking about the virus and being crazy. I was, working construction, and a lot of the guys there had the same attitude that Andrew was talking about. I'm tough, it can't touch me, and I thank God I'm home now after dealing with that for a while. So everybody stay home.
Be safe. Yep.
So, and then you were also, before I get into my draft pick, which you're going to disagree with me on, Ant, but we've disagreed many times, but we still get along. It's all good.
Yeah.
Listening to all that Sixers talk and about Prism and all brought back many memories, and we're very lucky. We have two of the most unique players in NBA history to play for the Sixers at their position, with Iverson being so small and dominant. And Charles, everybody don't think I realize, he was not a big forward. He was only 6'4", and the way he dominated, you would thought he was like 7 foot. Am I wrong?
Nah, you're right on, brother. You're right on. He was what? They call it 6'4" and change, and nobody could rebound. Right, and nobody could rebound. And he had great. Think about his hops, Doug. I mean,
absolutely. He was amazing to watch. Him and Allen had a lot of the same attributes at their positions, the way they dominated with their size differential with everybody else. Neither one of them were unique at their position. And we're very blessed to have been able to watch those guys over the years.
Yeah, Doug, you're right on.
We're going to disagree. I mean, I want to stay where we are. And I mean, I like CeCe Lamb. I also like Ruff, and I'll be happy to have either one of them. But myself, and you know I like to call you up and give my
decisions and
stuff like that. I like Jefferson. I like Justin Jefferson a lot. He was a lot faster than I thought he was going to be. And the way him and Burroughs played, the way he was always in the right position, the route running he does, I would like to see them stay where they are, take him, and then take one of the speedsters in the later rounds to replace Deshaun. Because, like, next year, if you're going to have to keep – if Alshon and Deshaun are still there, and hopefully they're playing, I think those three on the field together would be a perfect fit in that offense. And I think Jefferson is so polished. And he scores. He's a touchdown machine. He knows how to get open.
All right. So I'll agree with you in that I think he's a very good route runner. And I think he is a really good hands. And I think he's going to be a good pro. However, I need an outside guy. That Wentz has had enough slot guys. He needs outside speed. The only thing that opens up an offense is outside speed or an outside threat. Like Judy say. Judy's a threat. Like Owens.
I mean, but he is big.
He's a slot guy. He can't play outside.
But he's a big slot guy. He's over 6'1", and he does run a 4.45. I think that I think he played more slot in college because of the matchups. I think it was just the way LSU's offense was designed. I just think he was their man. He was more their tight. He played their tight end and Julian
Like, think about this for a second, all right? Everybody tells you, every scout, I mean, you don't have to listen to me, that he's better suited for the slot in the NFL. So knowing that, just knowing that fact, you know, again, I'm not God. I don't know. I mean, can he go on the outside? I'd say no, but we'll see. But when you want a guy that is a lock to be on the outside, Wentz hasn't had that guy ever.
I understand. I think that, but I think Deshaun will play next year, and I think that he'll have it. But I also wouldn't mind seeing draft that guy in the second or third round, like back it up with the speed guy, because there are quite a few guys out there that do have the speed that have pro capabilities.
Yeah, and then you wait and try to get the kid out of Arizona State, and then he's gone. You know what I'm saying? Like,
maybe trade up in the second round. Trade up in the second round to get them. You're giving up less.
But why, Dougie, I don't understand why you don't want to trade up and get Lamb or Ruggs, who's a lock.
Like I told you, when I saw, I've heard locks before too, and at wide receiver that haven't panned out. Also, my point is, I will be happy with either one of them, man. I'm not disagreeing. They both look like. But they have a chance to not be who they are, the same as you're giving me without Jefferson.
I disagree. I mean, I think that those guys are – I think the higher you go, the less chance that these kids are busts are. Right? Isn't everything – thanks, Dougie. Great stuff. Isn't everything mitigating risk the higher you go? It's a great argument. Dougie, great job. We'll come back. Still above a segment before we go over the Mikey Miss. Cause Radio Tunis, 97.5 The Fanatic.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, let's get back to the phones as we hang out. Don't forget Mikey Miss. He's going to talk a lot about the Jordan doc. He and I were just talking about it. Let's go to Dante. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Dante.
Yo, what's up, cuz? How you doing, buddy?
What's going on, Dante?
Everything. How was your weekend?
It was great because I watched the Jordan doc series and made my whole weekend.
Listen, I can't disagree with you, buddy. I was up to 2 in the morning. I watched it twice, both episodes.
Did you really? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I was up to 2 in the morning. Yeah, listen, I got some news for you, but I also want to talk about the draft first.
Yeah.
I feel like if we're going to trade up, man, I think the one team we got to trade up, if it's not going to be Oakland, it's got to be Tampa Bay. I did a mock draft myself, and I think the Eagles, you know, if they pull the right strings, can get a trade with Tampa. To overjump Denver.
So do you?
I think it's possible.
I like that. I like that a lot.
I think it's possible if you pull the right strings.
What about where does the run? It's going to be interesting. Where does the run of receivers? Where does it start? Is the first?
I'd be honest with you because I don't think it was a Howie thing. I think it was a Joe Douglas thing. I think Joe Douglas was the one who made these picks over Howie, and I think he's going to find a way to ruin it for the Jets. I don't think he's going to go receiver in the first round. I think they're going to probably go defense, trying to beefing up that defense, especially since they're, you know, in possible trade talks to trade Jamal Adams. So you're going to have to find somebody back there for him or try to, you know, find a replacement for him, even if it's not the safety position. I think they're going to find a way to screw that up, though. So I think it's going to go 12, 13, and then the Eagles can trade with Tampa Bay. Because, I mean, Tampa Bay doesn't need any weapons. They need any offensive weapons. They just need their offensive line to get beefened up. So I figure,
I agree with that. I mean, I also think you got San Fran's potential trade partner. So who are you looking for? Looking for Lamb? You looking for Ruggs?
Honestly, I think Lamb is your DeAndre Hopkins. I think he's my draft comparison to him is DeAndre. I think Jerry Jeudy will be more on the Amari Cooper side. I'm not big on Jeudy.
I like him, but I agree with you. I think Lamb would be not my number one choice. And I do
I've been watching Lamb since Baker Mayfield was at Oklahoma. And I fell in love with the kid. But as far as the receiver comparisons go, I think if you give me the top five receivers, I think in order you go Lamb, Jefferson, Ruggs, then Jeudy. And then to round out the fifth spot, I'd probably have to go with Jalen Reagor as your fifth spot.
I like the kid from Arizona State. Now, the only thing I would disagree, I think Jefferson is a good receiver, but I still think the Eagles need an outside guy.
No, I mean, listen, we had this conversation before. I told you I would not be upset if we drafted Jefferson, just for the simple fact. I'll be honest with you, if we were to stay pat at 21, mm-hmm. I think they'd trade up in the second round to get a speedster.
Yeah, I'm not in love with that scenario, but I hear you.
Nah, yeah. But before you let me go, I got some news for you, buddy. So Thursday night, I had a migraine. Friday morning, I woke up with no taste, no smell, congested. Saturday, I had to go get tested. And the doctor told me there's about a 70 to 80% chance I got this COVID-19, man.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I swear to God.
Now, where were you? Were you exposed at all?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm a butcher, so I really don't know if I was exposed to it at work.
Right. Do us a favor, man. Keep me posted on how you're doing.
Oh, of course. Right. I'll be calling you throughout the week.
All right. Well, you know my prayers are with you, brother. You know that.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate you. Thank you.
You're going to be fine. We know that you're going to be fine, man. Thanks, brother. Take it easy. Be careful up there. I mean, and it comes on. I have a dear friend of mine. His father has. Dear. I mean, his father's like my second father. I love him. And he's fighting right now. Thank God it looks good. But it's scary. It really is. Let's go to Quasi. It's my man. He's getting ready for Thursday night. Quasi, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
What's good, cousin?
What are you doing, my brother? You ready? No glitches for you Thursday night.
Hey, look, man. You already know how I'm geeking out. It's like it's finally here. It's like let's have it. But on the flashback game, I kind of remember where I was. I was at my junior prom. Okay. Yeah, I was at my junior prom, and I remember that. We was back in this big conference room, and then we, every once in a while, you got to go to the bathroom, you got to leave the conference room, you go past the bar. So we checking in on the game every once in a while, right? But you got to keep it moving because you're not allowed to be around the bar.
Right.
And, you know, the prom go as planned. We had a ball, tearing it up and everything. And as we leaving in the lobby, heading towards us, we see Phil Jackson, Bill Cartwright, and Paxson. Coming in, it was the Hershey Hotel, brother. The Hershey,
get out of
Hershey
here.
That night. They stayed at the Hershey that same exact night that game went down, right?
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my, how a brush with greatness. So we're walking out and I got my
The Hershey there. Hotel. That's
you
crazy.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they stayed that night. That's where they stayed. And that's where the prom was, right? And it's my dream prom, man. And then we're walking out the front. But, you know, I'm like, whoa, they staying here tonight? Like, so I'm not, like, really star-struck because, you know, I'm a sports guy. I'm like, you know, they can go ahead and keep it moving. I'm like, but.
Do me a favor real quick because you have to finish it tomorrow. hurry up. I got to hear the exit.
Okay. Well, walking towards the outside and then standing out there in a black trench coat, bald head, Michael Jordan. He's standing there, and I remember that I could, there's so many different ways you can go with it, but I remember
that's
I chose.
Cool. Hershey Hotel. It was on Broad Street. Oh my God, that's crazy. That is so cool. All right, listen, thank you for listening. Don't forget, Mikey's coming up next. Our handoff brought to you by Philadelphia Hand and Shoulder Center. Specialized care for all hand, wrist, arm, elbow, and shoulder injuries and condition. For more information, visit handandshouldercenter.com. Everybody be safe. Quasi will finish the conversation tomorrow. Everybody will get ready for the draft. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Mikey. Be safe. Have a great day.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.